Hey ladies, welcome back. I'm Emily Thomas and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the podcast that helps you love your actual life so that you don't need to run away from home. Perfection is nonsense, even though we're always looking for it. It's so silly. It's not even actually a thing. And peace is a perspective shift away. I had some serious moments with myself to have some perspective shifts this weekend. It was one of those weekends where my husband just kept calling it a dumb weekend because we were so busy. It was not even a weekend. But one of the ways I struggled well was I asked my next door neighbor to host an event that we were doing together because I just couldn't. And the event that I did host, we had Friendsgiving at my house. When I asked my kids to help clean up, I just kind of expected bad attitudes just so that I wasn't surprised when they happened. And that was helpful. And they really didn't even have that bad of attitudes, which is great. But anyway, one thing I did was recently all my houseplants died because I can't even bother to. And it was just my houseplants right by where I do dishes. I mean, the water is so close and yet they just died because I didn't water them. Anyway, so I wanted to redo that area, that windowsill area, so that I don't have to water it and keep it up. So I went and bought some stuff that was on clearance at like Target and stuff and made a cute little window area for myself before I hosted the party because I was going to feel excited about the party if I had a new little window area, and I did. Interestingly, one of the plants never died, and I was so confused about how that possibly could have happened. And I even kept looking at it to be, as all the other plants were dying, I thought, why is that one just fine? I even checked it to see if it was a real plant. Like, it'd been that long since I'd watered those plants. And then later when I got rid of all the plants, my husband's like, well, where's that one plant? And he described the plant that never died. And I said, yeah, I don't even know if that was a real plant. He's like, oh yeah, well, I've been watering that one. I'm sorry. You've been watering one of the plants while all the other plants died? Like, he was actually watering the one, but he just picked the one. Like, all the other ones were dead to him, and then soon they were dead to all of the rest of us. But he just was watering the one. Who waters one plant? I mean, I feel like what I'm doing makes sense. I'm not caring for any of them, but he's just picking one? I don't know. It kind of feels jacked up to me. So anyway, we have the one plant that's alive and in his good care, but now on the windowsill, I don't have to keep anything alive, and I'm excited about it. So anyway, I struggled well by having a nice windowsill to enjoy this very busy weekend. Oh, and just in case any of y'all think, and I don't ever mean to give this impression, that I have it together somehow, because I don't. But in case you think so, I just want to let you know. So we had Friendsgiving last night, where my kids just invited all our friends over. We had our neighbors, and we just kind of had Thanksgiving, but with friends. And then today, which is Sunday, the very morning after Friendsgiving, we invited over our whole street. We invited 45 homes to have brunch, but my next door neighbor hosted it because I just couldn't host that many parties in a weekend. Anyway, so I come to find out, because several children who were making good choices came up to me and said, hey, you have a child who is running around the street, ringing on doorbells and running away. I'm like, oh, isn't that neat? Just the day before we host a brunch for the same neighbors to love them, we're going to, some of our neighbors are like 150 years old. And so getting up to go to the door, it's like a whole event. And you've done that just for funsies and then run away. And then, you'll see them tomorrow morning. Oh, anyway, I just thought that's really funny. It's not funny, but I'm trying to find it funny. Anyway, so sometimes we love our neighbors and the night before we jack with them. So way to go, kids. So today's show is about what in the world are you supposed to do when life doesn't go as planned? I think we can all identify, yes? A lot of times when we look back, we can trace God's hand in the situation. We can see what he was doing when it's way in our rearview mirror. But in the actual moment, when God's not saying nothing, and we've been asking, and we're hearing crickets, it's hard to trust, right? So anyway, I think you're going to love this talk with Sheridan about a pilgrimage he took and all that he learned about what happens when life doesn't go as planned. But before we start the interview, I want to let you know. So last week, Katie and I talked about celebrating and how do we celebrate well. Well, next week, Rebecca and I are going to solve all y'all's problems relating to celebrations. I got to say, though, putting them all on Instagram, I have a hard time keeping up with them. So I'm going to ask that we try a new thing. Go ahead and email all your problems regarding celebrations. I don't care. It could be about Thanksgiving, Christmas. It could be about celebrating birthdays. It could be about hosting things. I don't be caring what you email me about as long as it has to do with a problem relating to celebration. Email me at hello@momstrugglingwell.com. Katie will get me and Rebecca those problems and we will solve them free of charge. I'm not even going to charge you any money. We're just going to fix your life. Okay. So make sure to email me your problems and then tune in next week while we solve them. Okay. So again, that email is hello@momstrugglingwell.com. All right, let's go ahead and get started on my chat with Sheridan. Good morning, Sheridan. How are you today?
Hey, it's good to be with you, Emily.
Yeah. I'm doing so well. You're in Oxford.
Oxford, United Kingdom, yes, and actually the sun is out today, which is wonderful because if you know anything about the United Kingdom, and I know that you've had a little bit of time in the United Kingdom, it doesn't always have the sun out, so it's a good day.
I know, I feel so sad that you're inside, missing it.
Well, that's right, some of us do actually have to work, and so yes, I have to work on some deadlines.
So, Oxford, I just feel smarter even talking to you right now. So exciting. Will you tell us a little bit about yourself and your wife?
Well, originally a Brisbane boy, Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. And if anybody reads the book that I've just written, you'll come to realize that I didn't ever feel at home in Brisbane, even though I spent 26 years of my life there. But that's a whole big story. Why didn't I feel like that? Anyway, so we had 26 years in Brisbane. I met my wife in Brisbane. My wife's Maren. I started off in radio in Brisbane. I then was a youth pastor for a period of time. And then we moved to Perth in Western Australia, the most isolated city in the earth.
Oh, really?
We had 6.5 years there where I was in radio. We then moved to Sydney, the best city on the face of the earth.
Okay. And you really felt at home there, you said.
I loved Sydney. Okay. Absolutely loved Sydney. Yeah. Went there to launch a national radio show. We had 5 really good years there. And then life turned upside down and Maren and I moved over here to the United Kingdom so that she could have an opportunity to work at Oxford University. She's in medical research. And so we came really for her to take up that role. And so 8 years now we've been here in the United Kingdom. So It's been quite a ride.
Yeah, I read your book and I was so moved to send you a letter and say on Instagram, not a letter, a message, and just tell you that is so good. It's beautifully written. I'm not just saying that because I read a lot of books and it was just so applicable to the life of anybody because it deals with identity and it's such a ethereal, hard to pin down word that I know myself and so many of my listeners are like, who am I really? It's mysterious and it feels like you want to know. And obviously, you know, on a cognitive level, we are children of God. We are daughters of the King. Like we understand that, but like, how then what?
But the big question with that, of course, is, well, yes, you're a daughter of the King, but so is she, and she is as well, and
exactly.
She is as well, and I'm a son of the King, and we need kind of something a little bit more detailed, don't we, those big, broad categories, and of course, when things go wrong, which is what the making of us is all about, really, who can we become when life has gone wrong, we need to kind of nut down a little bit, drill down a little bit, and, you know, it took me, I'd say, about 5 years of reflection and 2 almost full-time years of writing to get the making of us finished. It was a difficult book to write, but boy, it's been life-changing because of this, just trying to really nut down, well, who are we? And in particular, who can we become when life doesn't go as planned?
Yeah. So just a little background for the listeners. You and your wife have dealt with infertility and the story is still there, right? I mean, it hasn't resolved. Yes?
That's right. 10 years trying to start a family, and you name it, we tried it. We tried IVF. We waited for nearly 3 years on the adoption list in Sydney. We tried special diets. We tried chiropractic. Emily, I don't even know what we tried chiropractic. We tried special diets. We tried special supplements. We tried healing prayer. We're committed Christians.
Yes, yes.
We tried all of that. And at the 11th hour, when we had finally decided that our last embryo that we had available from our last round of IVF, that this was it, if this didn't work, we were going to move on with our lives as a childless couple, we were told that we were pregnant.
Okay.
And on Christmas Eve of 2010, we received a phone call saying, "We're sorry, we got it wrong. You're not."
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah.
And that's when it all kind of came crashing down. And that's when Meryn just, she said, I need something else. I need a consolation prize of 10 years trying to get this thing happening. As much as you like living in Sydney, Sheridan, I need something else. I need some sort of consolation prize. And so when she was offered the job at Oxford, we saw that as the consolation prize that kind of God was giving her. But that meant, of course, a huge change for me as well, because I had to let go of the national radio show, which itself had been 10 years in the making, and a whole bunch of other things. I came over here. My identity was thrown upside down. I didn't know who I was or what I was here for again. So
yeah, so you know what you're talking about when you say that life doesn't go as well.
A little bit of experience, yes.
Okay, let's talk about bras. Most of us don't like them. Some of y'all get around not wearing them at all. I don't understand that. But anyway, they're usually just not our favorite. But I want to tell you about a bra company and a bra that I just love. It's basically anything by Third Love. So you start off by taking a fit finder quiz where you answer a couple questions to find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. I know it doesn't make sense that you can do that online, but you can. I did it and it worked. And they promise that the bra they give you will give you a perfect fit. You have 60 days to wear it, to wash it. Test that joker out. And if you don't love it, return it and they will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. I promise that it will be the most comfortable bra that you own. The labels have no tag, so there's not going to be itching. The straps are not going to slip off. It's very lightweight. And my favorite part about Third Love is that they donate all the gently used bras they have to women in need. They support local charities. In fact, they have donated over $15 million worth of bras. That is amazing. Third Love knows there is a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering moms who are struggling well 15% off of your first order. So go to thirdlove.com/SWP to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. So again, that's thirdlove.com/SWP for 15% off today. Okay, so you decided that you were going to go on a pilgrimage and follow a monk. How do you say his name?
Cuthbert.
Okay. And the whole time I'm like, I don't know how to say this. Why did you pick him to follow like his life journey?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, my church background, I haven't been kind of trained to think very much about the great saints of the past, you know, apart from Paul and Peter and, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You don't really think very much about some of those great historical Christians. England in the 7th century was basically not the United Kingdom back then. It was basically seven kingdoms, mostly all at war with each other. In the north of England, a little kingdom called Northumbria, the king there, Oswald, became a Christian. He then called some missionaries to come in from Ireland and said, look, you know, come and evangelize my kingdom. I want it to become Christian. They sent one guy, it didn't work. They sent another guy called Aidan, it really worked. The guy who kind of followed Aidan within a couple of people was Cuthbert. And Cuthbert is today revered as this amazing man of faith. Even if you're not a Christian, if you live up in the north of England, you will love Cuthbert because he has been so pivotal for the founding and the kind of the shaping of the north of England. Durham Cathedral has been built around Cuthbert, where his body finally came to rest after 100 years kind of fleeing the Vikings. The whole of the area has been changed. This is the man who actually gave us our very first environmental laws.
Interesting.
He was the very first person in history who made a law that you weren't allowed to eat the ducks and the eiderbirds and those kinds of things up in the north. And so he became the world's first conservationist. This was a guy of miracle. He was a guy of incredible faith. He would go into the warring hill tribes where nobody else would go, take the gospel to them. And as a result, the faith really took hold in the heart of the pagans back then and then spread throughout other parts of the United Kingdom. I think it could be said, Emily, that really you and I are Christians today. You're in the United States. I'm in the United Kingdom, but I've come from Australia. If it wasn't for people like Cuthbert, who really saw the faith take root in England, then the faith moved later on from England to the United States. It moved from England to Australia. We're really Christians because of the work of people like Cuthbert.
That's true, because there's a lot of people between Paul and us.
A lot of people, a lot of very faithful people that history forgets.
Yes. Okay, so you decided, I am going to walk. I mean, and it just sounds hard. Your very first day, it was like pouring buckets. Even as you were leaving for your first walk, I was like, don't do it. What made you decide to do that? Was it just, tell me about why a pilgrimage?
Yes. Okay. So again, something that I've never done. I like to walk. I like the occasional hike, but I'm not incredibly fit or anything. So to do a 116-mile pilgrimage was something new for me as well. There was a couple of reasons. Number one, I just finished the previous book to this one, a previous book called Resurrection Year, which was all about us coming to the United Kingdom, starting again after the broken dream of not having a family. I was exhausted from that, and so I was kind of ready to do something really different. The second reason was that Cuthbert later on inspired a bunch of artists to produce what we now call the Lindisfarne Gospels. Now, these are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, illuminated manuscripts, as they call them, beautifully illustrated Gospels. This book is now 1,300 years old. It's held in the British Library, only comes out of the British Library once every 10 years. If they put a page on display, they turn it once every 3 weeks because the page is so frail.
Wow.
It can't be exposed to much light. It's got to be held in a vacuum-sealed box.
Oh, my goodness.
So they were coming out for the first time in a decade out of storage and were going to be on display at Durham Cathedral. So we went for a walk, my friend DJ and I, from Lindisfarne Island, which is where Cuthbert lived and worked and did his mission from, and went for the walk down south to Durham to go and see the Lindisfarne Gospels one of the few times that they've come out. So that's kind of a couple of the reasons why we went.
Okay. What did you learn at the end of all of that? You guys had some fantastic conversations, which is what the book's about.
Yeah. So it's DJ and I talking about our lives. We're talking about our childhoods, talking about the experiences that both shaped us in our childhoods and the difficulties that for both of us in completely different ways that then ended up being the seed beds out of which our passions grew. Really interesting story in the book about DJ and growing up on a farm in Australia and being surrounded by some really rough people in neighboring farms. And one day they woke up to find that their whole herd of these very fine quality fleece goats that they were farming had been completely slaughtered. Some of them had been taken away, some had been stolen, and it seemed like everybody in town knew who did it. The police seemed to know, but nobody wanted to convict anybody because it was a small town, everybody was in the know. And for the first time, 8-year-old DJ is confronted with extreme injustice. Now, it's really interesting to see that later on, DJ would go into working with Compassion International to go and fight for children facing the worst injustices around the world. And we were able to kind of piece that together. Did you see how that led to that? So there's some stories like that, which, you know, have been really helpful for readers because they've kind of gone, hang on a sec. I can start to see how God has used those times in my childhood, maybe my teen years or whatever, to kind of be the seed beds out of which good things can flourish. I have to tell you about this time. For the, I think the first 2 days of the pilgrimage, we were walking in sight of what looked like an upturned tooth. It was just this thing in the distance. Turned out to be this old relic of a castle. Again, going back, oh, in this case, it wasn't as old as some of the other things I've mentioned. It was only 800 years old.
Oh, you know, no big deal.
That's how we roll here in the United Kingdom. So your 12th, 13th century castle, and, you know, it's amazing. And the story behind it is it was built by this guy called Thomas, Earl of Lancaster. And there's no reason there was any need to have a castle in this area. There was no fort to protect or anything, but it would have been magnificent. And the best that the researchers and everything can come up with, that was this was just really a bit of a trophy to show people in the surrounding areas how wealthy he was, how powerful he was. And you kind of go, well, 800 years later, this castle is still standing. It's crumbled, but, you know, it's still standing. It keeps his name alive. That's quite an important legacy. But then when you walk up and you read the instruction board at the front, it remembers Thomas as, I quote, an arrogant and unpopular man.
Mm.
And that was an important conversation for us to have. How many of us, when we think about this whole idea of identity and purpose and calling and legacy, how many of us think about the castles we want to leave behind us? You know, it might be the book that forever changes the literary landscape, you know, or it might be a big business or whatever it might be, the big things that we think are going to keep our name alive, when actually what really matters is character. And it's so simple. It's so basic. In fact, it's so pedestrian. I think we've forgotten how powerful character is. But at the end of our lives, Emily, when people are standing around talking about us around our caskets on our final day on earth, I'm going to be thinking about the books that I wrote or amazing podcast downloads that you had. They're not going to be talking about that. They're going to be talking about that time when I was really sick and Emily came around and spent 3 days in a row looking after me, when I took the kids and looked after the kids when I really needed them, when she came around, when she listened to me, when Sheridan dropped everything and he came around and he was there. That's what they're going to remember.
Yeah.
It all comes down to character.
Yeah. That's really good. How embarrassing, though, to, like, that's your legacy. You, how sad that that's on the front of that castle. But, yeah.
But you think about it wrong. That's what we so often do. I mean, we have a conversation in the book about Ralph Nobel, the founder of the Nobel
that
Peace Prize.
That was amazing. Yes, tell us, Ralph.
Well, when we think about Ralph Nobel, we think of the Nobel Peace Prize, and we think, again, what a fantastic legacy. We think of him as a man of peace. Actually, the Peace Prize is only one of 5 prizes given out under the Nobel brand, if you like, but we think of him as that. The fact is, though, that history knows him as a man of war. He actually, even to his dying day, was a manufacturer of weapons and arms. And there's been lots of questions raised about his legacy, because you kind of think, well, hang on, if he was a man of peace, then why did he, to his very dying day, still have all of these ammunition factories? In fact, he opened more. Some say, well, maybe he did it because he was using the money to put into good philanthropic ventures, or I don't know, you just don't know. But, yeah. Or was it just a big PR exercise? Ultimately, we don't know. But the fact is that what we present as the legacy, what we think our legacy is going to be, in the eyes of God, that's what really matters most. And what is he going to see? He's going to see a bunch of things that never make it into the paper, never make it into conversation, never make it into a podcast conversation. He sees those little things, and those are going to be the ultimate things that really I think he's going to probably be bringing up, and we, you know, see him face to face and say, well, remember this bit and this thing, and remember that time where you went round, and those are the things I've recorded in the book of life.
Yeah, yeah. Huh, it's amazing. Okay, so I had been waiting for years to try Stitch Fix because I was trying to, very honestly, lose a little weight, and I finally realized, I mean, that's stupid, and I'm done waiting. And so I started using Stitch Fix. Guys, they nail it every time. I don't know. My stylist, her name is Taylor, and I feel like we're friends. So Stitch Fix is a sponsor of the show, and so I got to try their products out and the service, and I'm hooked. So I want you to know that sponsors of the show don't just cost you money. They wrote me in too because I am such a fan. So anyway, Stitch Fix, I spend my own cold hard cash on it. Well, I need to let you know that they now will be styling my children. When it comes to size, it's hard to get kids' clothes right. It's super easy when they're little and they're kind of like just round and everything fits. They're like cute little squishy babies. Well, as they get bigger, it's not that simple. Plus, you add on to that the fact that kids are individuals and they have special feelings about the colors they wear and how things fit and which things that they will and will not wear. And sometimes, I don't know if you've seen this, I feel like the cuter it looks on them, the more they hate it. Do you hear? Are you with me on that? So Stitch Fix Kids is an online personal styling service that delivers the children's clothes, you can get shoes, you can get accessories, and it comes right to your door. Kids get to complete a style profile quiz. You know they love quizzes. My daughter is constantly talking about all the fun quizzes she takes. And then they have their own personal stylist who will send them a hand-picked box of items based on their style preferences. We've done it, and I can't believe how good the Stitch Fix stylists do every time. Best of all, there's no subscription required. You can have automatic shipments sent or only get a couple new pieces whenever you want them. Shipping and exchanges and returns are always free. So to get started today, go to this website, stitchfix.com/kids/SWP. And you can try Stitch Fix and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. As a bonus, Stitch Fix is going to waive their $20 styling fee when you use this code. So make sure to go to stitchfix.com/kids/SWP. That's stitchfix.com/kids/SWP. Did you grow up watching Bob and Larry and the rest of the VeggieTales gang? Now your kids can too, with Minnow. So Minnow is an ad-free streaming video app that's designed just for kids. It has 30 episodes of classic VeggieTales, plus thousands of other shows that teach your kids about Jesus. My kids, when they were younger, they loved it, watched it all the time. The good thing is you can feel safe letting your kids choose any show that they want to watch on Minnow. You don't have to worry about what might pop up, and there aren't any commercials. So visit gominnow.com, that's M-I-N-N-O. Use coupon code STRUGGLEWELL to begin your 7-day trial for free. You can start streaming anytime, anywhere on your phone, tablet, TV, or computer. You can even download your favorite shows to go and stream on multiple devices at once. With Minnow, kids discover God in stories they love, and parents find expert help and everyday encouragement as they lead their family in faith. Minnow helps you have the conversations that really matter with your kids so you can experience the goodness of God together. Minnow, stories kids love and values that parents trust. Use coupon code STRUGGLEWELL, all one word, to start your free trial today at gominnow.com. And Minnow is spelled M-I-N-N-O. So again, go to gominnow.com and use coupon code STRUGGLEWELL, and you can start your free trial today. Okay, so in the book, you talk about when you realized that you were praying, but you weren't really seeking, and you were asking, but you weren't really knocking. And I have that underlined and dog-eared, and I love that. So I'm just going to read this little passage, and then we can talk about it. Is that fine? Okay. A lesson from my 20s comes to mind as we walk, seeking direction for my life. I had prayed for guidance, but a whole 2 years later, I still had no idea what to do. I can identify with that. Then some words from the Gospels had struck me with unusual effect. Keep asking, they said. Keep seeking and knocking, because those who ask receive, and those who seek find, and doors open for those who knock. And that's when the hole in my strategy had been shown. I had prayed without seeking and asked without knocking, waiting for an epiphany instead of tapping on some doors. Once I put action behind my prayer, by writing letters and making calls, my path into radio had become clear. Please talk about the difference. Some of us are so petrified of making the wrong choice that we don't do anything.
Oh, so important, Emily. So the context is, I'm speaking to people who are single when they'd love to be married, or they got married and they got divorced, or they've never been able to have children, or they've had children and lost them, or they're estranged or something, or the business has gone south, or they've never been able to reach their artistic goals, all of those kinds of things. I'm talking to people for whom life has not gone as planned. And what I've discovered is that when we go through moments like that, it's very easy to sit and stagnate. It's very easy to get to a point where we just kind of go, well, that failed. Why should I even try again? And what you've just read was something that came to mind on the first day of the pilgrimage. And here we are. We're kind of we're full of energy because we didn't have that energy by the end of the 10 days. But we're full of energy and we're kind of striding. And it just feels right. And I remember this experience back to my 20s. I became a Christian having come out of nightclubs. So I was kind of working in as a DJ in nightclubs.
Okay.
And this is where I wanted my future to go. I wanted to be the best DJ in Brisbane, then Queensland, then Australia, then the world.
Yes.
And I actually started to win some competitions, but it never filled the hole inside. And that's ultimately how I became a Christian. Then I prayed for 2 years to know, well, what should I do with my life? I'm not supposed to go into nightclubs. What should I do? Had no guidance whatsoever until I actually started putting action behind the prayer. And it just got me moving again about this whole idea is you probably have a glimpse as to what you'd like to aim for. A little bit of a whisper inside, maybe some sort of idea that won't go away, a little dream. And these need to be tested with other people. You need to prayerfully test it, share it with a close confidant, a spiritual director, a pastor, a close friend, spiritual friend. But these God-given dreams tend to linger. They tend to hang around. And there comes a time where we should stop just praying about them, but pray and act. Go and do something. Write a letter. Write an email. Knock on some doors. Find out what training you need to get. So important. Once we do that, then we find that the doors either open or they stay shut. And that is guidance.
Yes.
Now, to talk about this fear of making the wrong decision, so important, especially when, again, maybe we've had some moments there where maybe we thought we were following God's direction and it all just fell in a heap. I have spoken to people, Emily, who have had people give them, quote, prophecies where things have just gone wrong. I just think of this one couple. A prophet came to their church. They hadn't been able to have children. And this prophet, quote, told them how many children they were going to have, the dates that they were going to be born.
Oh, my gosh.
The names they were going to give each one of them. And then, of course, the years rolled on. None of those children came about. She then had a nervous breakdown over it because, obviously, God's not the one who's at fault. I am. My faith wasn't big enough.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And that's not an isolated example. So what I've learned is that when I couldn't hear God's voice, I was still in God's hands. There were times where I didn't know where I was being led. I didn't know, particularly when we came over here to the UK and I had lost everything that I'd built. And I didn't know where I was going. And yet, with hindsight, now I can look back on those first 3, 4, 5 years and go, actually, God was putting this into place and this into place and this into place. Sometimes you don't need to know how God is guiding you. If you have given your life to Christ, if you have put your life and your future in his hands, if you are seeking his will, even if you don't have that nudge or that whisper or that correct prophecy or whatever it might be that comes and gives you the guidance, you're in a good place and you are in his hands, even if you can't hear his voice.
Yeah. The journey is so much more important to God than, frankly, it is to us. We just want to get there.
Right, right. Well, that's the other thing we could talk about is straight line thinking. We typically think, okay, I am at A and I want to get to B. So the most direct path to get to B is a straight line. I'll go and do this, this, and I might stop off here, but I'll go straight to B. Of course, there are no straight lines in nature. It's all bend and kink and curve, and that's the way God leads us as well. Often what we think is the destination is just one little journey point. And sometimes what we see as the destination is the ultimate one. Might take us some years to get there, but there's some important interim places we need to go to beforehand.
Yeah. Man, I think, ultimately it's like we just need to calm down. We just need to trust God. He's got it. But I don't know. I get myself so wound up pretty tight. So.
Oh, me too. Me too. You know, as we're talking, I'm having a check here for myself, because it's like, put this into practice every day, Sheridan. You've learned this. Now put it into practice now when you don't get the direction on something that you're pursuing in the time that you wanted it.
Yeah.
You keep walking forward, you keep knocking on doors, you put action behind your prayer, and you trust that in the midst of it, God is leading, and He is.
Yes. Well, and ultimately, I think for me, it's also to check yourself knocking on doors. I sometimes knock on doors and then I like bulldoze them open, because you can force things to happen that shouldn't. And then you end up with a big castle and a plaque that says you're a jerk on the front of it. You know what I'm saying?
Perfectly summarized.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's talk about, if you don't mind, the fact that y'all still don't have kids. It seems like this door has closed. Talk to me about your conversations with God about that. And because sometimes we just don't get what we really thought. Number one, we wanted, and number two, it's normal. It's not like you said you want to be the king of England or something.
Right.
Kids are fine. Yeah. Kids are good. Yeah. Kids are a blessing.
It's very natural. Exactly. It's very natural, very normal to want to be a mom, a dad, very natural to want a whole bunch of these things. Yeah. So, I mean, this is taking us into resurrection year territory. So the whole story is told there. We had 10 years of those conversations with God. And, you know, here's the really interesting thing about that, is that during that 10 years when we were trying to start a family, we had quite clear guidance about other things in our life, about moving from Brisbane to Perth to Sydney. We had quite clear guidance about career paths and whether to take this job or not. On this particular matter, God stayed silent to an eerie degree. There was one time where a pastor and his wife arranged for a special prayer meeting for us. This is right at the end of kind of the journey, and we were trying to work out, look, do we keep pursuing this, or do we already have our answer? Because by that stage, after 10 years, a no from God would have actually been relief.
No kidding. We dealt with infertility for 6 years, and it was like waiting for a missing person to come home. Like,
yes.
When is enough enough?
Yes.
But if there's still hope, I certainly want to hope. Yes.
Right. And right, 6 years. Okay, that's significant. And so somebody like us, we would look at your story and go, but you kept on going for a seventh and you got your children.
Right. I get it.
So maybe we just need to keep going.
Yeah.
Maybe it's another round of IVF and another round of IVF and another round of IVF. Maybe we keep on waiting for the phone call from the IVF clinic. Maybe we keep on waiting for the phone call from the adoption agency. And that's a big challenge, isn't it? When do you know to draw a line? For us, the answer came when we came to the point where we thought we've tried everything that we feel comfortable trying. We didn't want to go donor sperm or anything like that. So we had certain limits as to what we would do. And we felt we had tried it all. We were exhausted. And we thought, we've given this 10 years. We've given it a good go. We've prayed about it the whole time. We've tried everything. It's now time to draw a line and move on. Now, here's the important thing for anybody who's also wrestling with this particular challenge, is that it was important for us, as you well know with infertility, it's a grief without a funeral.
Yes.
Every 28 days.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh, yes.
You're expecting, there's expectation, it's followed by disappointment. But the grief doesn't end because there's no end to it.
There's no closure, yeah.
There's no closure. So we had to bring closure. So we actually drew a line and we said, right, from this point on, we're not going to go back to this. We have, if you like, we have buried the dream. Now, again, that only would make sense to people when they know that we've pursued it for 10 years. God hasn't spoken to us either way for 10 years about that. He's been eerily silent. That prayer meeting that I talked about, they didn't tell the prayer people who gathered what the issue was. And so everybody started praying and just were praying as they were led by the Spirit. And one woman, she said, you know, Maren, my wife Maren, I feel like I really should pray for your womb. And so, you know, they were being guided and everything, and for emptiness within, all of those things. So, you know, they were being led.
Yeah.
Halfway through the prayer meeting, it then came time, and then we explained what it was we were here to have prayer for, and it all made sense. And so we then said, look, what we really need guidance from God now is whether we keep on going or whether we just call it a day. Everybody went to prayer. For the next 15 minutes, there was complete silence. It's like, again, just the heavens had closed on this issue. That, to me, now looking back, was very telling. The fact that God would guide us, lead us, speak to us about other things, and on this particular one, we weren't. And we often would not be on the same page as to whether we should go for overseas adoption or local adoption. Should we go for the Philippines? Should we go for Taiwan? We were looking at one stage. And Maren and I normally, after talking about it, praying about it, we're normally on one page, and often we weren't. All of that speaks to me now. It says, you know, that there was some confusion over this and we weren't given the direction because it wasn't to be. But then bringing the dream to an end and then saying, okay, we've buried the dream. We're not going to go back and dig it up. If Jesus wants to resurrect the dead, he can. We leave it in his hands, but we're not going to go back and dig it up. And that's really important because, of course, for so many people getting that closure, they keep on wanting to go back and dig it up. And you've got to leave it in his hands and say, well, the one who can resurrect the dead, we leave it in his hands. If he wants to, that's going to be his prerogative, but we're not going to go and dig up the body.
And you are fine with that?
We are fine with it because we've been able to grieve. If we had not been able to draw the line and then to let it die, we wouldn't be able to grieve. And then if you can't grieve, you can't move on. So this was the important thing for us. Now, for other people, it'll be a different journey, and you can't say, here's when to draw a line. You just can't. You've got to walk it through, talk it through, make sure that your marriage is first priority so that you're not driven apart, because it's very common for marriages under this kind of strain to be ripped apart. Pray about it. Have other people give you input. Trusted people, seek God together and make a decision, and know that when you've done all of that, that, you know, you're making a decision before God, and to not torture yourself forevermore with the what if question. What if we had done what Emily did and just waited one more year? What if we had tried one more round? What if? The what if question will rip you apart. You've got to come to a point where you say, I'm not going to ask that question.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good for any of us. I mean, you're always waiting for something. As soon as you're done waiting for the first thing, you're waiting for the next thing. Okay, so it's kind of a hard gear shift, but application-wise, my listeners are moms. They are busy. They cannot go walking around England with their friends as much as we would like to. Do you have a recommendation of a pilgrimage-esque situation that could lead to some epiphanies and some time with the Lord?
Yeah. So on my website, I have a little video about doing a mini pilgrimage. And so this can be something that you could do in an afternoon. And so there would be probably some time where you and a friend could spend an afternoon doing that. So you pick a place. Best case scenario is that actually it's a place that's meaningful for you. You know, before you and God, there's something meaningful about it. But it doesn't have to be. There's a really interesting difference between the way the Celtic people, the people of the north of England back in the day, and say other people who looked at the kind of the Roman way, if you like, of pilgrimage, the way that they approached it. So the way that we typically think about pilgrimage is going on a journey to a destination. The Celts actually had a different view of pilgrimage altogether. They said that the destination doesn't matter. I am going to throw myself on the mercy of God, and I'm just going to simply walk. Or in some cases, they would get in their little coracles, their little boats, and they would set out in the sea and say, well, wherever the breath of God blows me, that's where I'm going to end up.
Huh. Okay.
So, these great stories of these missionaries arriving in Scotland and deciding, well, that's where Providence has led us. We're going to then serve God in Scotland because they had jumped into a curricle from Ireland. But do you see the difference? One says, I have to have a special destination to reach. The other says, no, this is a walk with God. So just recently, I went down to a little town called Abingdon, which is was about 8 miles or so from Oxford. So the walk took me about 2.5-3 hours to get down there. And that was a little mini pilgrimage for me. It was just a time where I could walk with God and be present before God. I can't say that I came back feeling like I had heard the voice of God on all these issues in my life. But I had spent this quality time walking with God and having a certain serenity and peace that came as a result of that. And as a result, some clarity about some of those things. I took my journal. I stopped at numerous points along the way and just journaled some things, some questions, some ideas, some prayers. When I got to Abingdon, I found this lovely park, found a lovely big old tree, went there, prayed some more, journaled some more. And then in the end, I could have either walked back or in this case, because I had only had an afternoon spare, I decided to take the bus back. That was a really special time. That's something that you could do.
I like it. I like that. I want to give it a shot. Maybe not in Texas in the summer.
No, pick your moment. Definitely pick your moment. And not in England in the winter when it's pretty brutal.
Very true.
But can I speak just a little bit about the identity thing? Were you
of course.
Going to get to the identity
Please.
Thing? Because I think that's where so much of this will help is most of us build our identity on one of two bases. One is career. The other one is parenthood. Right. So typically for a man, it's career first. Who are you? I'm a writer, speaker, broadcaster. And, you know, if I was, you know, I'd say, oh, and a father of three. Typically for women, not exclusively, but I'm a mother of two kids and I'm a copywriter by trade. And we tend to build our identity on those two bases. As you and I sit here now, and as our listener sits in their car, doing their job, whatever it is, as they're listening to us right now, you and I have a whole raft of identities that we haven't even thought of. Right now, you are wife to, I don't know your husband's name.
Yes, Eric.
Wife to Eric. You are mother to your children, obviously. You are daughter to your parents. You may well be a sister to some siblings. You are a friend. One of the big things that I really discovered as I went through writing The Making of Us is just how we minimize the holy calling of being a friend. Mm. It is a holy calling to be a friend to somebody else. If you were just a sacred friend to somebody for the whole of your life and that's all you did, you would have pursued an incredible God-given calling. We are our names. We are our faces. If you go into the Witness Protection Program and your, quote, identity is hidden, what is it that they're hiding? It's not your marital status, your parental status, your career. It's actually your face and it's your name. These things under the call of God, under the providence of God, your face has been centuries in the making with generations and generations of DNA all passing down, all under the hand of God. Your name will have a specific meaning and maybe in the providence of God, that is also influential as well. We are so many things all at once. Why do we raise these two things up in particular and say, well, this is who I am? And what happens? Unemployment hits the first one and we start feeling like we're nobody. Maybe something with parenthood. I can't have children. I don't get married, whatever it might be. So that isn't there. And we think my whole life is meaningless. This is the great crisis, I think, of the Western approach to identity. But we have all of those identities, and then at the core of it is the fact that we are children of God. And the fact that if I can just go and spend some time in my spare room and enjoy being his specific child, his specific son, I am a child of God in a way that you are not a child of God, and you in a way that I'm not. And those uniquenesses, all of those things wrapped together means that we can have a much more solid, rich, resilient identity than what we typically have.
Yes, much, much broader foundation. Yeah, I like what you're saying about that because I do feel not special enough when I think of there's just a lot of daughters
Yes.
but I think in that communion with the Lord, you can, you can't even explain it, but you can get to know how you have this special connection with him.
Yes. And it's a one-off. It's unique. It would not be the same relationship that any of your friends have with God. It is just you and God in a particular way because of your personality, your character, your history.
Yeah. And you can feel that he delights in you for exactly all your weird quirkiness and all the ways that you've been injured by this world and what you've learned from it and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed. And he has a particular plan and vision to take you beyond that to somebody who you've never even dreamt of. So all of these things come into play as well.
Oh, man. This is so good. I hope everybody reads this book. Really, really good. Yeah, I bet you do.
I got to put food on the table, man. So yeah, please buy a copy for you. Buy one for all your friends. Buy one for your husband. Buy one for his friends.
So funny. I love it. Well, Sheridan, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been really encouraging.
It's been great to talk to you, Emily. Thank you.
All right. I'm so glad there are smart people in the world. I love hearing what they have to say. I was really encouraged by what Sheridan said, and I hope that you were as well. So let's get down to business. What will your strategy to struggle well be this week based on what Sheridan said? So Sheridan and his wife had to let go of some dreams. He had to let go of his career that he had built. She and they both had to let go of the dream of having children. Letting dreams go is not fun. He mentioned drawing like a line in the sand and just putting it down. After counsel, after lots of prayer, I mean a decade of praying, maybe it struck a chord with you that you're holding on to something that you just need to let go of. It's not fun, but maybe you do that and then God can give you what he had, you know, because you've let go of what you thought was best. I loved what Sheridan said about our sufferings can turn into the seed beds for our future flourishing. In the book of James, he talks about counting our trials all joy because we know what they are producing in us. It's the same kind of concept. So with that perspective, we can expect that God is going to be growing something beautiful out of that suffering. I know for me and my struggle with depression and just mental health in general, man, I love me some mental health patients. And I really don't think I would if this hadn't been something that I too had struggled with and God gave me just a passion for these people. So maybe this week you struggle well by having a think about trials in your life that you have come through on the other side of and what God might be wanting to do with you as a result of those. Something that I really identified with and I didn't love was that man with that giant castle that he built for no other reason other than to look impressive. And the plaque on the castle says, "This is a castle of great big jerk." That's terrible. So maybe, I mean, are you, hopefully you're not, but is there a place in your life where you're really working hard to build something just to be impressive? And in the meantime, you're really being a jerk? Maybe don't do that. And it doesn't even have to be a thing. Like, I remember when I was working really hard on my blog and working really hard on the Etsy shop that I had, I really was not loving my family well. So I guess you could say Etsy was my castle. So maybe this week you stop trying to build that castle. Yeah. Sheridan also mentioned that God does not lead us in straight lines. It can be infuriating. I know it's infuriating to me. Maybe you struggle well this week by writing that down somewhere that you can remember. So if nothing is making sense, you might be exactly on track. That quote about the journey being important, not the destination, I hate that quote. But you know what? It's true. The journey is so important. Sheridan talked about the dreams that he buried, and we all have dreams that we've buried. And it made me, I just kept coming back to this song by Ellie Holcomb. You know, she's my super favorite, but it's called Red Sea Road. And if you haven't heard it, that is such a great anthem for seasons of laying dreams down. And such a reminder that God is always, always there, always making a way through places that there really was not a way. So most of us who listen to the show are moms, and being a mom is amazing. But a lot of us, our kids are out of the house and we are not moms 24/7 like we used to be. Or some of us are moms 24/7 and we feel like if we could just have maybe 17 minutes to ourselves to do some grown-up thing, that'd be amazing. Being a mom can be all-encompassing, where you feel like you've lost yourself. But I loved what Sheridan said about the holy calling that is being a friend. So maybe you struggle well this week by just taking some extra moments to be a friend to someone, because it really does make such a difference. So this whole talk about life not going as planned, it made me think of 2 Peter 3:9. And this is talking about Jesus returning, and everybody has always wondered, when's that going to be exactly? And it's been a while, so we can assume that God is slow. But 2 Peter 3 says, he's not slow, like the way we regard slowness. He's patient. He's waiting. And so I think we can carry that concept into him not answering us when we really feel like we've waited like entire minutes for an answer. God isn't slow. He's patient. He's always at work, but he's at work on our character, which feels like the worst, but it's actually so, so good and so kind. If you got something out of this episode, please share it with a friend. Just hit that button on your podcast app and share it. And do make sure you're subscribed to the show so that you can come back next week while me and Rebecca solve your celebration problems. And please make sure to come find me at Mom Struggling Well on Instagram. And if you want even more content, join me and Katie on Patreon at patreon.com/momstrugglingwell. Let me go ahead and pray for us. Father, when Jesus said that in this world we'll have trouble, he surely was not joking around. Sometimes the trouble is that we don't get the most basic natural things like children. Lord, even though we can read in the Proverbs that our plans are not the best plans, you know everything. Things are actually going to go the way ultimately you would like, but we just make plans. We just bless our hearts. We think we know better. Thank you for your kindness to us when things don't go as planned and we kind of throw tantrums like gigantic babies. But thank you for your just presence and comfort, because it really does hurt when our plans don't come to fruition. Lord, thank you that even when we can't hear your voice, we still are in your hands. And I pray that you would strengthen us this week to trust you in the middle of the thing that's not going as planned right now. And God, help us remember that we are in good company, because all of us have one of those things, maybe many, going on right now. Thank you that you're always at work. Thank you that you're always good. Thank you that you are kind. You're not slow. You're patient. In Jesus' name, amen.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.